from a book entitled Krishna, which is a series of stories of Krishna. In those days, when love was predominant and held no place for that which overcame and destroyed that which could not hold sway there, because when love is strong and active, then doth evil become feeble and weak, and slinketh away into darkness and deep places, where the light of love cannot reach it to reveal its blackness unto the light of the sky. In the river on whose bank Krishna, Rama, and cowherd boys often sat and sang the deeds of their hero, there dwelt a huge serpent monster with the thousand hoods, who, by the venom of its hideous body, did permeate the water of the lake with deadly poison, filled the air of its vicinity with a pestilent atmosphere that was deadly in its influence. Krishna one day led the boys and cows to the pool, and they, being athirst, drank of the deadly water that lay still and without a ripple. Ever is evil inviting in its outward calm. Lo, in an instant, the thousand-headed monster lifted its hood, and deadly poison having done its ghastly work, the boys and cows lay on the bank lifeless and motionless. They fell at the feet of Krishna. With a glance of life-giving love cast upon the dead ones, Krishna walked to a tree that was close by, while the boys, alive again, in amazement and wonder, gazed at each other, forgetting in the joy of the love in the look that Krishna had cast upon them the moment before. On reaching the top of the tree, Krishna stood for an instant and gazed at the boys. His world and the serpent and a light as of molten gold seemed to come from that body, more lovely than the sun to look upon. Thus it was for a moment, then into the deadly pool he plunged, while the thousand heads of the serpent darted their venomous tongues and struck the body till the boys fell into unconsciousness, and the cows groaned in pain, and the men and women with eyes bulging with fear and tearing their hair almost swooned at the sight of the boy, who was God, crushed in the poisonous embrace of the monster. Yet, even as stricken with horror, they gazed. Krishna, a glance like light on them cast, and breaking away the grasp of the monster, he lightly sprang upon its hooded head and danced like the stars upon its hood, till one by one they were laid, and vomiting blood that was thick and black, defeated and broken, the monster sank beneath the waves. And with a bound, Krishna stood in the midst of his friends who knelt at his feet. Then they drew him within their arms in the madness of joy and safety. Oh, grand was the sight of love, crushing out hate from the land. And God sang and shouted and crowded together to see sin conquered and virtue grow strong. Yashoda and Nanda, with gopas and gopis, maddened with delight, took Krishna home, while the heavens opened and scattered flowers to carpet his path. And forever the lake was free from the venom the serpent had cast, and nearby atmosphere purified from the pestilent influence that hovered about there. For the monster, Krishna's command, had departed and sought no more to injure the land. But so great was the happiness that overflowed the heart of all, in leading the boy triumphant through the forest, that they tarried a while in the glow of the moon, in their joy to behold the beauty that filled the night. But far in the distance a light was seen that spread wider and broader in its glow, and higher its flame leapt, and every second nearer and nearer it came like a living sheet of fire. And so it was, a castor plantation, a burning world, had become and quickly surrounded the merrymakers, who held in their midst the joy of their hour, and they cried in fright, O Krishna, thou child or God, whatever thou art, protect us from this death and the roaring flame. We care not for our lives, O Krishna, for they are thine by our love for thee, but oh, the anguish die and not see thy face again. O thou who by thy strength dost slay a serpent and drive from the land a serpent all-powerful, save us from this. Departing with thee and thy loved companion Rama, he that is most like thee, O most lovely one, deliver us, we pray. Light as a leaf in the wind, the boy bounded to meet the coming flames. For a moment he stood in the seething sea of fire and lifted his hand on high, and lo, the fire was not, but the flames were seen to enter his mouth. And again, with dancing and singing praise, the boy they made for his home with joy and delight. I'd like to speak this evening on overcoming. In the story read tonight about Krishna, could be seen as a fanciful story, something that was told perhaps around the campfire or in the evening to entertain children. But as we know, these legends, these mythologies, have an outer and an inner meaning. When we dive deep into the inner meaning of this, we see that Krishna is confronted with the serpent. Now, as we know, the serpent represents the most base power within our humanity, the sexual energy that's stored at the base of the spine. And so, it's when it's turned toward the world alone, and it's turned towards bad habits alone, then it creates something that destroys this body and destroys the consciousness. Whenever we see where sexuality has been misused and misapplied, we see there that there are many other so-called sins that go along with it. Oftentimes we see there's drugs. We see that money becomes a central part of that, so that greed and a loss of will all become wrapped up in this. And so in order to purify this, you see, the waters of consciousness that lie underneath, the serpent was underneath the waters. And that means that even deep within the unconscious, even as the Krishna, which is the Christ of the East, is overcoming, and all the people are so in love with this Christ self, even though this is the occasion and the sun is shining bright and all seems well, even under the peaceful waters lies this unconscious, unbidden force of the thousand-headed snake. Now the thousand head means that it has many different devices to it. It has a thousand different expressions to it that all come from the same body of this serpent power. And it has this venom, it has this poison, which can poison this highest consciousness. So Krishna and the boys and the gopis and gopinas, the boys and the girls who are the playmates of Krishna, are these upward-bound forces. They are as the disciples were to the Christ. And so they represent these upward-bound forces, the forces towards good and towards the heavenly nature. And so they are all struck down by the snake. In other words, as this powerful force rises up inside, we are overcome at times by its power. But the Krishna stands above it all. He's bound to the top of the tree. Now the tree is the spine, and the top of it in this case is the crown chakra, or the Christ center. And so the Krishna bounds up and then dives deep. And when Krishna is at the top of the tree, he shines as molten gold. So when we go through these experiences, as we meditate deeply within ourselves, we see the molten gold, or the gold of the spirit, shining in that Christ, or that Krishna center, the Ajna center, this third eye point, point between the eyebrows. And all the disciples see this shining light of molten gold. And then they see Krishna dive deep into the water, to go deep into the unconscious, there to purify this venomous snake that has been turned against that which is good. And so the great battle ensues. And yet it is not for the disciples to do battle, but it is for that Christ self within us that will do battle with us and subdue the snake. It does not kill the snake. And even as in the mythology, I believe it is, of St. George, who does battle with the dragon, it overcomes and conquers the dragon, but he does not slay it. Because this tremendous force within the base of the spine is not to be cut off, because it is when it is turned in the right direction that it becomes the very fuel that uplifts his consciousness and begins the power of transmutation. So the Christ self goes within, deep into the unconscious waters, and there does battle with the snake. And many swoon or fall into unconsciousness during that time. So much of this is done even without the power of the conscious mind at work. But it is for all of those who look upon Krishna, keep their mind steadfast upon this Christ self. And within that, the Christ self does the work of this transformation that goes on within our own consciousness. And at last, the snake is subdued. And there is great rejoicing, or in other words, there is an upliftment, there is a feeling of bliss, there is a feeling of rejoicing, of the purity and the love of God within us. But as that celebration goes, day turns into night. And during the night then, this tremendous fire begins to spread. Now within us lies the sun and the moon. The sun is this Christ center, and it is this molten gold that is seen during deep meditation. But also within us lies this moon force, and that is the solar plexus. The solar plexus are said to be the second brain, or it is the voice of intuition. Now in Christian terminology, this is John the Baptist. John the Baptist says, I am not the light, but I have come to bear witness to the light. Now through this moon force within us, or this voice of intuition within our solar plexus, it is not the Christ self. It does not bring us the purity of that consciousness with the power of it, but it is a lesser version of it, and it bears witness to the Christ. So if we learn to listen to this voice of intuition first, it gradually leads us to this greater and this higher intuitional power of the Christ force. Now there may be times when we experience that. For instance, we may walk into a room or into a certain place, and we'll get a feeling about it. And a lot of times they'll be in what's called a gut feeling, or down in the solar plex area we'll feel that something is right and familiar, or we'll feel that something is very wrong about something. When I was out with a friend the other day taking a walk, we walked into this particular garden up on Queen Anne called Parsons Garden. And it was named for the family that donated it to the city. And it was an absolutely lovely place. And when you walked into it, you felt a shift in the atmosphere. You felt a certain presence there that was very wonderful. Obviously, somebody had created something beautiful there. They had invested the growing of those plants with their love, and with a great sense of beauty, and it reflected that both outwardly and inwardly. There's a very kind of heavy sense about it, a heavy presence, but yet it was not an oppressive kind of heaviness. It was something that was just very thick with the vibration of the love and the beauty that had been created there. And so you see, this is that second brain, or that voice of intuition, that you can sense individuals and places and circumstances as to whether they are right in you or not. And when you get something that is not right within you, and you get that feeling there, it is best to pay attention to that. It is best to respond to that and either get yourself out of that place or somehow make it so that you are safe and all right about it, you see. So this is the way that we are given messages. And if we listen to this voice of intuition, if we honor it, if we put our minds to it, that will grow within us. Now, we don't have to look outside of ourselves for psychic phenomena and all the rest of it. This comes right within us, very naturally. And as you enter into deeper states of meditation, this becomes something that is quite natural to you. When your mind becomes quiet, you will begin to sense the feeling of the power and the wonder of God, the feeling of beauty, the feeling of purity, and it will resonate deep within you. And when there is something wrong, when there is something amiss, that will also resonate. So as you pay attention to this and look at it with a discerning mind, you will begin to ferret out which is, feelings that come from the unconscious and are influencing it in that way, because through our lives we learn that certain situations perhaps represent danger for us or an uncomfortable feeling. So you see, this also comes through feeling, these unconscious forces, and that is different from intuition. When we get something from the lower unconscious, so to speak, that which is based on our previous experience and registers as a dangerous or an uncomfortable sensation, this comes from the quality of mind, which is rooted within our own past actions and may not represent the accuracy or the purity of information. Now, when we get something from God, we feel as if it comes from something that is quite beyond us. It is rooted in us, and yet it has a transcendent quality. So that is something to look for within the mind. Also, when we get something that comes from the lower unconsciousness, quite often it has a condemning quality. It has a critical nature to it. There are a whole host of associations that go beyond just the purity of that information. So that we no longer, perhaps, if we meet an individual and we are uncomfortable with them, and it is based on something from our lower mind rather than from our intuition, we may feel ourselves condemning towards that person. We may feel ourselves as if that one doesn't, even deserve to live on this earth. And it can get quite bad within our own minds. And if those are the qualities that go along with it, then that's very suspect. Because even when we get those intuitions within ourselves, there's a purity about it, and there is an impersonalness, if that's the word. There's an impersonality about it. It's not something that registers strictly personal with you, and you don't necessarily have a condemning nature towards it. There was once when I was at a particular park, and there was an altar that was set up. It was a Catholic seminary at one point. And there was an outdoor altar that is quite beautiful there, and it's sunken down below. But as I was walking around in this area, I felt I ran into something that was like a force field. And it was a wall that was just as clear to me as anything that I have ever experienced in the physical world. And as I walked towards it, every time I would back up and I'd walk towards it and run into it in exactly the same place. And it felt absolutely evil to me. There was something that had gone on there. Perhaps there had been some individuals that had worshipped something very dark and had done some bad deeds there. It was that kind of powerful force there. And I could walk around it and circumference it. And as I did so, it was just like a wall. And that was filled with hate, and it was filled with a very discomfortable kind of feeling to it. And so with this knowledge then, I knew what to avoid. And it didn't fill the entire area, but it was very particular to that one area, and it was off to one side. And so we have these kinds of experiences, you see, but it didn't register as anything personal around those individuals that may have performed those acts, but it was very clear and very definite. And so when we get very personally attached to the information that's coming towards us, and we're condemning, and we take it very personally, that's a good notion, that's a good signal within us that we should pay attention that this may not be truly intuition coming towards us. Now, really, experience and having experiences around this and really working with this kind of knowledge is the way that we can become more clear as when something is coming from our intuition and when something is coming from our lower mind. Now, it says that there are three ways to tell whether something is coming from God or not. And one is to check it out with a saint or a God-realized individual and to have it verified in that way. Another way is, does it conform and correspond to what the scriptures say? And that's any of the holy scriptures from around the world. And the third is a prophecy fulfilled? In other words, is it something then that we're warned about and we stay away from, and then something that happens around that? And so then that becomes prophecy fulfilled. Or perhaps we get something about an individual and we just wait and we observe and we see what happens with that one. And through that, we see that, yes, they correspond to those kinds of qualities that we got about that one. Or no, they don't. They turn out quite differently than what we first thought. And so these are three ways that we might know whether we're getting something that comes from the voice of intuition, something from the higher unconscious. Now, this lower intuition mostly has to do with this physical realm and also the realm of the astral world, this energy realm that exists in this emotional realm, all about it. And so we'll get things from there. But as we progress on the spiritual path, we will also get intuition from a stronger, from a higher place. And that is this Christ center, or this Krishna center, at the ajna, the third eye point. And it is there that we feel this tremendous upliftment, and it is that we get a direct pipeline straight from God. And we stay in touch with it throughout. There were times when I first began to meditate and first on the spiritual path that I would get things from God. And they're just realizations and understandings that came spontaneously. And they were wonderful. But then they were like a dream. And they would gradually recede from my own consciousness. And it was like waking up and having had a dream. And when you first remember it, it's crystal clear. And then the details start to get fuzzy. Gradually, the whole thing may just disappear from your conscious mind, even though you're trying your best to remember it. And so it was with these kinds of revelations. that I would get them, and then they would begin to recede, and I could see where my mind began to fill in the gap, rather than the purity of that consciousness that came to me. My mind began to interpret what it was that I got. And so gradually it receded from me, and it was maddening, really, not to be able to stay in that point of clarity. But gradually with time, that consciousness becomes a pure pipeline where you feel that continuous contact, and things come to you in a stream at times, and they stay with you. They're not something that begins to evaporate. And so this is wonderful. This is getting in touch with this Christ consciousness then. And it is superior and way beyond any other types of intuition that we get. And it comes from a directly from this higher unconscious, this highest consciousness of God. And it comes directly to our own consciousness. And so you see, this is our true and our highest nature. This is the evolutionary course for which all mankind is headed. And everyone is in varying stages of this journey. And so we find some that have highly developed sense of intuition about the world. Perhaps they can know things about individuals or anticipate events that are coming. But this is all of this lower nature. But when we get into this Christ center, this Krishna center, then we begin to get revelations about the eternal patterns that are not just about individuals. They may pertain to individuals, but they begin to unfold the perfection of this physical cosmos and this physical universe and beyond. Because you see, the physical universe is just a small aspect of the greater consciousness. Now, how is it that I can say this? It is through these experiences of beginning to be uplifted, where you are no longer rooted in this body. You are no longer rooted just in the emotions or the lower intuition. And you are no longer bound by the thought process that go on within your own consciousness. But you feel yourself uplifted beyond all these and feel your mind rooted in that eternal consciousness of which we are all a part. And the question only becomes, is those who are consciously aware of it and those who are unconsciously connected with it, that the conscious mind lies separate. And in that separation lies the errors and the difficulties and the problems that we get ourselves into. And so Krishna dove deep into these waters and struggled with the snake and overcame it. And then there was this celebration and going back by the light of the moon. So you see, they were returning home from this highest consciousness and returning back to the base of the spine. And as they did so, they passed by this moon of unconscious, or the intuition, the solar plexus. And then this great flame came towards them. When this serpent power, you see, is subdued and transmuted, it then gives up its dark blood, or in other words, this Venus blood that is within us and represents our rootedness to this world. Now the Venus blood is purified and made pure red when it's exposed to the air, and you know, but it's rid of all of its toxins. And so the snake then spit it all out, all this toxic, venomous, dark blood. And so this is the path of the yogi, you see, is that part of it is purifying the circulatory blood that we're in so that we might go into that breathless state. And as that happens, then the serpent power gets triggered, gets released, and it creates a blaze that comes and it begins to consume everything in its path. And the purpose of this is to purify and change this physical body, this astral body, and even the causal body. But those who are devoted, those who look to Krishna, see they are all willing to give up their lives, and yet they want one thing, and that is the ability to see God, and to see God in everything, and for this sake, they ask to be saved, not for their own, but for their own ability to be able to continue to worship and to see God within their own being. And so this is the only thing that is left. Everything else is burned up. Everything else is consumed in this great fire. But what is left is the purity that's left within the consciousness. And so it is in this way that this fire comes in. And when it rises up to this fifth chakra, or at the mouth, where Krishna consumed this fire, you see, then it is lifted up into this Christ center. All the lower five chakras are purified in that moment. Now, these Judaic masters of the Mid-East also have these great and wonderful truths. The story is told in a similar way in the story of David overcoming Goliath. Now, David means beloved, or it is at the heart center of the devotees. And David is sent out to do battle with this Goliath, this giant. And he takes with him five smooth pebbles. You see, and this represents the five chakras that lie below the Christ center, the sixth center. And there, he takes the pebble and he launches it with his sling and he hits Goliath in between the eyes, in the forehead. And so when this purification comes about through love, you see, this purification happens, Goliath is slain, and it releases the consciousness from the five lower centers into this Christ center. So you see, it's the same story that's told using different kinds of symbology around it. Now, these stories serve to several purposes. One is that at a time when people did not read, and in general, they were told as a oral tradition and handed down from one generation to the next. Now, many people saw them as stories about good overcoming evil and saw it in a general sense. And to this extent, their minds were quickened, they were uplifted, and they saw the truth as their own minds could conceive it. But also, in the terms of Judaism, these Jewish masters, these tremendous spiritual masters, would teach their direct disciples about the inner meaning of them, and so that they too would begin to see that it just didn't represent an outer truth, some kind of moral philosophy, which on the surface is good, but it's limiting, but also taking it deep within the consciousness and finding there that there is an eternal truth that is true for all humankind. See, this truth isn't just meant for one, or one here and there, but it is for everyone. But within this earth plane, we find that there are a great mixture of consciousness. We find that there are people of the very lowest, most perverted, twisted consciousness, and people who are of the highest minded. And really, this is a unique circumstance. When we rise above into worlds beyond this one, there is more of a separation between the different varying levels of consciousness. So you see, this is a very difficult school to enter into in order to learn life's lessons. We see here evil done, and great measure at times. And it's difficult to be with that. It's difficult to look upon that and to have compassion for everyone concerned. And yet, it is compassion that we are told to have, to love our neighbors as ourselves, and without qualification, that the sun shines on the just and the unjust equally. And so should our love shine upon all equally. And this is a difficult thing. It's difficult to let go of our sense of righteous indignation. And indeed, there are times when we should act on that, and we must prevent those who are innocent if we are in a position to do so. But all the while, we never lose hold of that eternal truth that all come from that one highest consciousness, which is God. Today, as I walked along the path, and I saw different ones coming towards me and passing by, it was shown to me within my own consciousness that each one of these were a soul that had come encased in this body, and the body was but an outer shell, and that the soul that inhabited that body was the true form of each individual. And so you see, letting go of seeing people as just being their physical selves and judging them on that and being attracted or detracted from that based just on that. But seeing each one as a soul that is perfect and pure in God, and that they have come into these bodies, even as we have, to inhabit it for a time and to learn lessons while we're here. And if we would know it, we would see that this life here on earth is a great privilege. That there are many who would wish to come here, and yet there are not the proper circumstances that are present in order for them to be able to inhabit a body here on earth. And so they waste their time. And so we have gained this great privilege to be here, to work out our own destiny. Now, what draws us back to a human body over and again is our desire nature. We come to believe that we will fulfill our desires, and then we will find happiness. But this desire nature is like a rising wave. The more that it is fed, the larger it grows. And the larger it grows, the more it demands. And it just continues to increase and increase. And just when we think we're going to turn a corner and find our happiness, it eludes us. And it will always elude us. For even if we would find great happiness while here on earth, each one of us has to leave this earth. And so even if we have perfection here on earth, it comes to a time of leaving it all. And so death becomes the great leveler. And it puts us all in mind of what is true about us. And what is true is that we are born as a soul with a body. Not a body with the soul. And so to begin to go within our own being and to begin to see what these soul qualities are, to find our treasure in the kingdom of heaven which is within us. And then it becomes manifest outside of us. Not the other way around. And yet, living in this material world, we get it reversed. We look to find things outside of ourselves in order to complete us and hope that that will manifest something good inside of us. And so we have turned it inside out. We think that by finding the right circumstances outside, will lead us to lasting happiness with them. But it is only temporary. But it continues to give us the promise. If we only had enough money, if we only had the right friends, if we only had the right home, if only. And it just continues. And all we have to do is look at those lives that have money, that have wealth, that have fame, that have it all. And so oftentimes these individuals are so discouraged, they are so unhappy. They do not have it what we fantasize they should have. They have done a study on people who have won the lottery, and the results are that those who were basically unhappy and maladjusted before winning the lottery continue to be so afterwards. And those who are basically happy and well-adjusted before the lottery continue to be afterwards. It made no change in that way. And true, those individuals perhaps did not need to worry about their rent, but they had another level of worry. They had another level of difficulty. And so this inner happiness, this inner kingdom, becomes the focus of our attention. And it does not mean that we neglect this world, for it is a manifestation of our inner world. And so we look to make our outer world a beautiful expression. You know, as Mother Teresa of Calcutta said so beautifully, do something beautiful for God. Live your life in such a way that you do something beautiful for God. And so you make your world, you make your life an expression of beauty. Whether it is in an act, whether it is in a word, whether it is in some deed, or the way that you decorate this body, or this home, or in whatever way you do it. You see, you make an expression of the beauty that you find in yourself. And when you get that proper relationship, that the world is an expression of your inner soul, and you seek to manifest that, then you can find great happiness. Because whatever the outcome, in this material world, your soul never changes. And when you find that peace in your own being that surpasses all understanding is beyond reason. And so that whatever your circumstance, wherever you are located, you can experience that peace. You can live that peace, that tranquility that is eternal, right within your own consciousness. And in deep meditation, the purpose for meditation is to enter into that place of perfect peace, perfect tranquility, and there you will find reflected the true beauty of your soul. And all questions come to a rest, and all answers can be themselves to you. But the greatest miracle is that you find yourself. You find out who you truly are. And you bring that back into life with you in the way just as you feel directed. And so to lesser extents, we can all do that in our minds. We can bring our minds to this inner beauty, and we can begin to reflect it in everything that we do. And so whether we take the teachings of the East, or the Mid-East, or the West, they all reflect the same path, the same way, the same approach. And it is in this way. And whatever, you know, even if you destroy all the laws and all the rule books around mathematics, the mathematically minded would rediscover mathematics. Now, it may take more time, and there may be a great trial and error period, but the logically minded would rediscover mathematics. And so take away all the scriptures, all the works on the soul, and the soulfully minded would always rediscover these same basic principles because it is rooted in truth of your own being. And so this path is not about accepting what another has said, but rather we use these scriptures as a roadmap for the unfoldment of our own consciousness. But really where it happens is right within us. And wherever we find that inspiration at, wherever we find that desire for God at, we take that and we begin to utilize it. And whether it is in loving God in a particular manifestation, whether it is serving God within a small child, and loving that small child as God, as an expression of that perfect purity, or whether it is taking it to our work and doing that work as if we were doing it for our beloved. See, in every aspect of our life, we can bring this beautiful, creative sacredness. And then, a church is not made of something with hands, but it is this very body temple, and yet is extended throughout this entire world. And so when we see a mountain, when we see the ocean, when we see a body of water, or a beautiful tree, or beautiful birds, we see that all as an expression of this one great consciousness, and as our own vision of our own sacredness right within us, and then we see it expressed everywhere about us. And then nature and all of those things begin to respond back to us. A very interesting thing happened to me the other day as I was walking in the park, and this robin came and landed on a railing that was next to me, just a foot away from me. And as I continued to walk, it jumped down onto the ground. And I walked forward, and as I got very close to it, jumped back up to the railing, and it just sat there. And then it flew up to a branch just ahead as I continued to walk. And I just played with it by clapping my hands each time. And we played this way all the way down, followed me down this very long hill, jumping back from the railing, down to my feet, up to a limb, and back and forth and around. It came all the way down to the base of the hill, where some other individual started walking up the hill, and then it flew away. You see, then nature plays with you. God plays with you in all these different forms. And it's a wonderful life. It's a rich life. It's full of meaning and deep sense of love and peace and sacredness. And it's not about being in a certain way or talking in a certain way or acting in a certain way. It is about being as natural as a child, as spontaneous as a child, expressing the spiritual consciousness that's within you. And it's not that you become someone else, acting according to some predetermined script written by someone else. It is you become truly your own self in a greater degree than ever known before. And this is the great truth. Because then you find that you are this eternal expression. And it takes you beyond just knowing yourself as a human body with a particular name and a particular vocation and all the rest of the things we tend to identify ourselves with. But it takes us into that eternal presence, that tranquil presence, that peace, that divine isolation. Rather, let us celebrate with these gopis and gopinas around the wonderful Krishna, and there the work will happen. And with the slaying of the serpent will come the fire and the purification and the great transformation, until body, mind, soul, will vibrate at that ethereal presence. Beyond all, and yet it's infinite in that
Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence
in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet
and surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.